And how long have you been here now? And do you now feel at home here, or do you still think of yourself as an outsider?
Here in Spencer, here in the Arctic. I think of myself at home in the Arctic. I don't believe that I could function as capably in the South anymore. It's just a whole different way of life, from a city life to this rural kind of life. And I feel comfortable, and I feel comfortable with the pace of life here. So this is, the Arctic is definitely my home. I don't know that Spence Bay particularly is. I look at my first Arctic parish, which was Coral Harbour, where my wife is from. I look at that as my home, and this is my place of business.
How long were you at Coral before you came here then?
I was at Coral for 22 months, and then as a result of our marriage, we were moved to Spence Bay, and we've been in Spence Bay now for 5 years and 2 months.
So you don't see yourself as moving, or the family moving back to the, or moving to the South or anything?
No. Unless we moved to the South because we wanted to ensure that our children's education was up to a universal level. And here, and in Coral, we've been lucky that the education level in the schools has been so high, and our children have been able to achieve what they have. But if, for one reason or another, that changed, then we would probably have to move south, but then it would be to one of the communities where there was still a large number of Inuit people, like Winnipeg or Ottawa, Montreal, and minister there.
Would Inuvik and Yellowknife have comparable schools to those in the south?
Yellowknife would. Inuvik probably. Rankin Inlet could have if they work at it. Iqaluit, or what used to be called Frobisher Bay, again, could have. And most of the smaller communities like Spence Bay and Joe Haven do have good teaching staff now, and as long as they keep that level or maintain that level, there's no problem.
If you did have to move south for a while for the kids' education, what would you miss most about living in the Arctic?
I think if we had to move south, I don't know that there's one particular thing I would miss about the Arctic. There's the opportunity for spending the summers out on the land, which I particularly enjoy. As you know from your previous experience, in the summertime, most of the people are not in town. The only people left in town in the summertime would be the skeleton staff for the Hamlet Council to do the municipal functions, the bay clerks, and the nursing staff. Everybody else is gone. And I enjoy the freedom to be able to go out with the people, hunting, fishing, trapping, camping with them, and ministering to them at the same time. So I would miss that, and also the food. It's nice to be able to eat from God's stores as opposed to from the processed food stores.
You've got used to having a straight meat diet, have you?
Not a straight meat diet, but a northern diet. We'd usually tend to mix the northern meats with southern vegetables, so we have a good blend.
How does the, you lived in the South for quite a while. How does the congregation here differ, if it does differ, from a typical, if there is such a thing, southern congregation?
As I said earlier, I haven't ministered in the South, so I would have to view any difference between congregations as, in one aspect, looking from as a layman, as a young layman at a congregation, to looking at it as a young clergy, a young cleric at a congregation. One of the biggest differences that I noticed, and it has always struck me, is that in the South, at a church service, the priest, the clergy in charge, the lay readers, and perhaps one or two other people will have a Bible out and open. In the northern parishes, when a cleric or when somebody is preaching, you'll find that everybody is reaching for their Bibles to follow along to make sure that this guy is making is saying what God actually says he's saying. That's one of the biggest differences, a very strong interest in actually seeing the Word of God as it's preached and not just listening to it. So they're involving their whole, the whole of their senses, as opposed to just their ears and their mind. I'm not going to say that that makes them necessarily better people, but that's one difference that I've noticed. perhaps another difference is in the amount of effort most people will put into supporting their parish. I'm not going to be derogatory of the southern people, because I know that there are a good many people who spend a great deal of time and effort ministering to their priest or to their parish in the south. But up here, it's still very much that the church is in one way or another, if not the center of the community activity, very close to the center. It's not as far removed as our twice a Sunday visitation, and that's the end of our Christian duty for a week.
Now, there's the Hamlet Council meetings and Hunters and Trappers all begin with prayer.
That's true, yes. All of the meetings, and I'm not sure why this has happened, but all of the meetings up here, no matter what it is, will start with a prayer, and will oftentimes end with a prayer. Whereas down south, that's very infrequently happens. Up here too, there's still a strong interest in having religion taught in the schools, not by teachers per se, but by pastoral staff of one kind or another from the churches. And that's something that we hear increasingly from the south that is being done away with because of the many, many forms of faith that there are in Canada, in the southern Canada. They feel that it is an infringement to have any sort of religious education unless it is a universal religious education. That is to say, we'll spend 1 week praying to the Christian God, we'll spend another week praying to the Jewish God, or to the Hindu God, or to whatever, rather than the situation up here where the teachers and the parents themselves are very interested in having religious education in the schools.
Seems the church is quite an important part of the community here too, isn't it? In one sense, it reminds me of a medieval community, in that the church is a major focus of social and other activities, and people attending lots of services, Wednesday night and Sunday, they've got several services. It seems to be a major part of their lives, more, which we've lost, many people at any rate, and we've lost in the south.
It is true that people are seem to be more interested in the organized religious life here in the communities. There are, both in Coral Harbour, where I have ministered, in Spence Bay as well, there are not only there's the Sunday services, but there are midweek services as well. And they are, with varieties of degree, they are well attended by many people from many different aspects. Some people will come only to a midweek service and won't come to a Sunday service for one reason or another. But there are, there is that openness that most people feel comfortable with the church and will be more open to attending church functions, whereas down south it's almost like you have to occasionally pull fingernails to get people in to other than Sunday services.
What role do lay people play in the church here? That it seems that they play a bigger role than what I'm used to, in certainly in Australia.
In the, I think I can say in the diocese as a whole, the lay people have a much stronger input into the workings of the church, both locally and on a diocesan level. Locally, as you know from your own experience, I have two licensed lay readers, that is, the bishop has licensed them to function in this parish to assist me, three or four non-licensed lay readers to take parts of the services. And in Joe Haven, which is my outstation, I'm based here in Spence Bay, but I have to travel to Joe Haven once a month. In my outstation, there is a licensed catechist who assists me there with two licensed lay readers and six unlicensed lay readers. And they run the full gamut of ministry activities, from preaching the word to leading the services. In many cases, they do a lot of the pastoral visiting. In other cases, they assist with the teaching of religion in the schools, or will lead the baptism classes. They are fully functional in almost every aspect of the ministry. In fact, the only thing that they do not do are the traditionally sacramental tasks of a priest. And I think that's universal across our diocese. You have to remember, our diocese covers 1.5 million square miles, which is 15 or 16 times the size of the UK. And we have a total of 34 clergy, two bishops and 32 priests, or deacons, or deaconess in one case, for 54 communities. There is no way we could function without the lay support that we have, just because of the vast size. It's impossible for a priest to be in every community every Sunday and throughout the week, and much of our pastoral duties in those communities without clergy are left to the lay staff, and it is commendable? No, that's not strong enough a word. It's a very important task that they do, and I am constantly amazed by the fact that the parishes without clergy are sometimes as fully functional and sometimes even more successful, if you want to use that term, although I don't like it, successful as parishes than those with clergy.
So you can go away, as you've recently been away, without the place falling apart. It will carry on, the parish.
Yes. Because I have to travel down to Joe Haven once a month, I do on a regular basis leave this parish, and I can do so trusting that my lay staff are going to function on. I had to go down to Baker Lake for teaching 2 weeks, and then I visited in Coral Harbor. So I was gone for almost 4 weeks just recently, and I knew that I could leave everything to Aluki and to Aiki, the lay readers, and to my lay staff. And when I got back, I could just pick up from where they had left off and carry on.